Today on Snail Trail 4x4, Tyler wants more torques and Jimmy wants more axles.
Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Bestline Racing. Bestline Racing has a complete lineup of performance additives for your engine's needs. From our oil additives to our fuel treatments, we have you covered for your hobby, tow rig, race car, or your daily driver. Check the show notes for your Snail Trail 4x4 discount at bestlineracing.com.
Beat time. Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how 3-4 swaps are going in Toyotas, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs, this is episode 139, coming straight into your ear holes. And joining me for this lovely episode is the one and only Mr. Jimmy Jet Black. Mr. Jet Black, how are you?
I'm doing well, Tyler. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just got a flu shot this morning, so my arm's a little sore. But
yeah, I got one of those a week or so ago.
Yeah.
And it actually, I've never, to my knowledge, gotten a flu shot.
Okay.
And I figured I should get one this year, just with everything going around.
Yep.
And just as another layer of precaution, you know, to stop getting sick or spreading the virus that's happening, right? And I think it hit me harder than I expected it to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I was, my arm hurt for a solid 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And I was out of it that night.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't out of it.
You're groggy.
I was kind of groggy and like, oh man. And a good chunk of the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's happened to me last time. I mean, they're designed to give you a mild form of the flu, right? Mm-hmm. The flu, different flu strains that are going around that year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so that your immune system recognizes it and fights it. And it's not hard. It's not strong enough to do anything to you, really.
Yeah.
Like to give you an actual like big time flu symptoms, but it's enough that your body recognizes it and your immune system checks it and puts it back in its place, so that if you get anything similar to that strand later on, your body knows how to fight it, and it's like boop, and you don't have to worry about it.
Absolutely. It's funny because I think it was my father was talking to me, and he was saying that he kind of changed my mind on flu shots.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And because I've always been like, no, I want to get like one, I want to get sick while I'm younger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so that I have
the immune system built up.
So when I get older.
Uh-huh.
And then the flip side was that I'm in fairly good shape and my body should be able to handle itself.
You do have a shape. I'll give you that. You do have a good shape.
Yep. A little oval nowadays, but so I've always been against flu shots.
Okay.
Because I've been always like, I'd rather get sick now and my body's strong enough that it should be able to defend myself.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking to my old man and he was saying that you're thinking about it wrong.
Yeah.
Think about it as, you know, like you actually missed, you weren't sick last year. So you've missed getting the flu or you missed getting infected, you know, or maybe you did come in contact with it and your body did fight it off and you didn't even notice.
Yeah.
But if you go every single year and get a flu shot, then you're actually building your immune system up more than what you were
if you're just skipping it.
And I'm like, oh, well, you know what? That's a good point.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah.
So I think I'm going to be one of those people that goes and gets their flu shots now.
Yep.
Mine was free at a free clinic over here at Sierra College.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was a drive-through clinic. Like show up, they stab you in the arm and you drive away.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I think mine was free. I probably went on my insurance or something, but
yeah, mine wasn't.
I didn't even go there.
No,
nice.
I don't have insurance.
Oh man, so cool. We are looking at this episode is going to be airing on right before Halloween here. So happy Halloween to everybody out there. Hopefully you're enjoying all of your Christmas decorations in your shopping stores and locations.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, happy Halloween to everybody. The next time you hear us, it will be Jim's month. No Jimber.
Yep. I think.
I am ready. I am set ready for No Jimber. Yeah.
Oh.
What are you getting me?
High five.
Oh. I don't want a high five. It's getting into flu season. Don't touch me.
$5 bill.
So No Jimber is going to be fun. I have something planned for each week.
Cool.
So I believe it'll be on Thursdays. That way we don't interrupt the regular scheduled Monday programming.
Sounds good.
For No Jimber. In other words, you're not special on Mondays. Right. You only get to be special on Thursdays in No Jimber.
As long as I can be special the 6 days of the week, you know,
that's the other 6 days. Yeah. Monday, no one's going to give a shit about you. Yeah. No.
You can all go back to your normal business on Mondays. But then Tuesday through Sunday.
Yeah.
I need happy birthday messages.
There you go. So we're going to put people on that. That is your guys' job. During No Jimber is the other 6 days of the week messaging Jimmy and saying happy birthday.
Brian Murphy's going to be messaging me every single day. I foresee
that too. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a meme set up for the other 26 days in November for you. But so No Jimber's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
What day is your actual birthday? It's like
election day.
Oh, the 3rd.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. That's right, because you have the same day as the secretary, but hers is in December.
Yeah.
So
the assistant gets reminded about how far my birthday is out every time we turn on the TV.
Oh, yeah. Election day's coming up.
5 days to election day. 5 days to Jimmy's birthday. Yeah.
Does she have anything planned, or do you know? Or
Not really. We were talking about it last night. And
I should probably coordinate with her and make sure I'm not kidding anything.
In regards to presents or gifts, I doubt it.
Okay.
But we're talking about going out of, going somewhere that next weekend.
Okay.
And we're kind of like...
So not Halloween weekend, the following weekend? Okay.
The 6th, 7th, 8th or whatever.
Gotcha.
And I'm kind of like, where are we allowed to go?
Yeah.
Are we even allowed to go out right now? We did find a place that is first come, first serve. So we might try to...
For camping?
Yep.
A campsite area? Mm-hmm. Nice.
So we might try that.
Where's that going to be? Just in case people wanted to say
they'll be
hi.
Down in San Diego. Way out of the way. Yeah. Or it might be out by Shasta.
Trail chasers might come find you in San Diego.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
It might be in Mojave.
Okay.
It
could be Mojave, could be Death Valley,
Bodega Bay.
Oh man, all these choices. We're gonna start splitting people up to hunt you down.
You're gonna
have
to.
Okay.
Good luck. I'll tell you this: it'll be at a national park.
Okay.
There's good only like 25 of those in the state.
Are you gonna take some GPS coordinates of fun locations, good spots to maybe hide something while you're in those areas?
Maybe. I think I'll maybe just walk around and check stuff out. I don't know if I'll actually get a GPS location because I'll probably acquire that when actually I put a puck down.
You should get some locations when that way we have some spots to put.
Well,
places.
I mean, I know of spots that I want to put them, not like to the foot.
What is your memory just that good? You know how to get back to places once you've been there?
No, it's more of a generic, like, I'd like to put one out on the Rubicon.
Oh. See, yeah. I'm like looking, and I'm like, what is a good point of interest? Like up at, on Meadow Lakes, the petroglyphs.
Yes.
I don't know where the hell the petroglyphs are. So I'm like, as long as I got GPS coordinates of where they are last time I was there. So
yeah, I have some that are more fine tuned as well, but.
Okay.
Yeah. We also received email. Or I received an email from a listener who is not a patron.
Okay.
Who is willing to hide pucks.
Oh, nice. Where at? Not Florida, right?
No.
Because I don't want to send any pucks
actually in the, I forgot what you call that territory. He's in like...
he's in Canada?
No. No. He's in like New Jersey.
Okay.
The New England area.
Well, we don't like New Jersey either, so...
Right.
They're up there with Florida.
But so, I mean, I have been keeping a small list of people that have reached out to me. If you're not a patron and you want to hide pucks and you want to help out, then you know, get in contact with me, Jimmy@snailtrail4x4.com.
That's awesome. Yeah, we have our puck extraordinaire. Our puck maker is getting a new laser engraver that'll help with making the design, since we apparently we made the design a little too intricate for his CNC router.
Right.
Yeah. So
I was kind of curious about that. And that, you know, it's like, here's what our design was. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of ways we could have made it easier.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, at first it was like, here's the design, mm-hmm. you know, and I wanted him to rebuttal against us and say like, no, you know, like if you did X, Y, and Z, we could pump them out five times faster,
quicker efficiency,
you know, and I would have done it.
Yeah.
But instead he goes off and he buys a laser to try and figure out if he can. Well, I mean, I know you can laser wood, cause I've seen Lee Outsane 80, do it. Uh-huh. So, we'll see how
you can laser engrave wood.
Yeah.
It doesn't just singe it and kind of like
it'll burn it away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
So, Lee was making some, tap handles. And he was actually,
that's cool.
He was like whittling down, like he would put it in like a small lathe or something, and he would turn it down, rotate it so it like was more of a cone shape. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then he was laser etching wood grain on the wood.
Interesting.
Yeah. To make it look more like bark and wood grain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty neat.
Nice. I wouldn't mind eventually, because I'm going to build a bar into my house.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to have a couple of things on tap, like it's just like mini kegs.
Okay.
And so I wouldn't mind having some wood taps that have topography etched into them.
Wow.
And then pick some like the Rubicon Trail topography and etch that into one of the taps.
Cool.
That'd be really cool.
Well, now you know two people.
Cool. All right, so let's see. We have some updates for everybody. My headphones don't want to work right now. There we go. So we have some updates for everybody. We have the first big one is, of course, we are coming to the end of October. So we have literally, like, if this episode's coming out on Thursday, we have like two more days.
Right.
That you can get in for both the recovery kit, the Dobinson's recovery kit and tree saver from Stellar Belt. And you have about 2 days to up your tier or get into the tier for April's gift box. Speaking of gift boxes.
Yes.
We got them in today.
We did.
Yep, they look awesome.
I might try and entice you to help me fold them all.
Oh, man.
Before you take off.
How much are you going to pay me for this?
Yeah.
I'm paid hourly, right?
Sure. Sure you are.
Yeah. No, yeah, so the boxes are, they look great. I'm really excited for them. So once we get them folded, we can get everything loaded and get them shipped out. I'm hoping we should be able to get them shipped out early next week.
Yeah.
So first week of November, mm-hmm. I think is when we'll get them out.
Mm-hmm.
So those that are in the gift box tier and were signed up and for the whole length and getting them for October, they should be coming to your doorsteps within the next 2 weeks, depending on where you are in the country.
Nice.
So there'll be a lot of fun. We got some really cool goodies in there this time, just like every time, and we're excited to, once everybody kind of has them, we'll start announcing what they were on the podcast here.
Definitely.
Yeah
it'll be good. So get in for that. We did have somebody move up and in the tiers here within the last week, so we do appreciate it. I'm excited to send these things out now that we have everything, you know, to get the boxes together and send it out for you guys, so I can see all your smiley faces on Instagram when you post about it. So that'll be fun. Let's see. We also have the Rogue Element Growler here in the shop, which is going to be next month's giveaway along with some other goodies.
That's No Jimber giveaway?
What? That's the, well, yeah, it's the Rogue Element No Jimber's month giveaway.
Yeah.
I'm not giving it, I mean, I am giving it away, I guess, but it's not from me. It's from Rogue Element,
uh-huh.
And we'll talk about more about them, you know, coming up in the month of November.
Yep.
But this thing it's 128 thermal, what do you call that, like a hydro flask style, uh-huh.
It's a big ass,
it's humongous,
it's a big ass hydro flask from Rogue Element, essentially. Yeah, like I said, we'll talk a little bit about Rogue Element, what they do, because they do a bunch of different stuff, a really cool guy, but this growler is massive. Like Jimmy, it was sitting on the recording studio table when I got here one day, and I was like, holy crap. There's no way I can drink that much beer before it goes bad.
Yeah. No, you need friends.
Like, yeah, that's part of the problem.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't have friends.
Yeah, it's made, so I have it here in my hand. It's made like a hydro flask.
Yeah.
But it's made
A dual wall, a vacuum sealed wall.
That's what I was trying to figure out. It's made by Drink Tanks. Mm-hmm. But this thing's it's 128 ounces. It's humongous. And it's got a pretty cool handle. It's got a really neat cap on it.
So is that 1 gallon? Is 128 ounces 1 gallon?
Okay. Yeah.
Jeez.
So
that looks bigger than a gallon. But I guess, it has the inner wall the vacuum sealed wall. So
yeah, so this thing's cool. And we'll talk more about it and everything else that we get for the next month.
Yeah. Very cool. And then
also, go ahead.
As I say, we also have December's giveaway all lined up too.
Yes, that we do.
So we'll get there when we get towards the end of November.
Absolutely. So I also wanted to say in November, so don't dilly-dally because it's coming up quick. Uh-huh. The Ultimate Garage giveaway is closing.
Ooh, it's closing November 17th or 15th?
15th or 17th.
It started on the 17th, which is the weird date. That's the one. So maybe, I think it ends on the 15th.
Right. So go get into that.
Yeah.
Go sign up for that. Chance to win $35,000 worth of tools delivered by Kurt Busch.
It'd be super, super cool if a Snail Trail listener
absolutely
won that. Like, absolutely. We would be so freaking stoked.
And then go fill out everything for them. And then when you submit it, make a screen capture or copy or a photograph of that screen that says you submitted it. You have like 5 to 7 seconds to do that. Mm-hmm. Then go over to our Snail Trail runner-up Gear Wrench Corey's Garage giveaway of Ultimate Proportions and Legendary Stuff giveaway. And submit all the same information to us and add that screenshot, and then you'll be entered into our $10,000 giveaway.
Yeah. So super cool stuff. We got a lot going on, and literally the only way that we get to do all this is because you guys listen. So if nobody listened to the podcast, Jimmy and I would just be here sitting and hitting record, and it would just be your average run-of-the-mill peasant podcast like Wheeling Wine and Whiskey. But instead, because we have awesome listeners and great fans out there, we get to do really cool stuff like be partnered with Gear Wrench and Rogue Element and Best Line Racing and all these really freaking cool companies. And it's because of the listeners, really. It's not because we're sitting here recording. It's because people actually want to listen to us that we get to do these really cool things. So,
which is shocking also.
I agree. I'm still blown away. So thank you guys. Really, truly, it is really cool to hear from you guys, to see you guys out on the trails, run into you guys out in the wild, hear feedback from you on Instagram, get posted in random memes that have Kermit on them, Kermit the Frog on them saying funny stuff. So yeah, thank you guys. I love the interaction. And it really is because of the listeners that I keep doing this. That's like a big part of the fun for me. So
yeah, I agree.
Very cool. Let's see. What else do we got going on? I think we hit on most of it. If anything comes up, we'll take a bird walk really quick in the middle of the show and come back to it.
Sounds good.
Cool. So we have been up to some fun things over the past week.
Have we?
I have.
Oh, okay.
I have a lot of updates. I don't know about you, but I have a lot of updates. Do you want to go first?
Sure.
You're looking kind of confused.
I was really thinking about what. I haven't done a whole lot.
Have you fixed Bobcat's door? Because I brought you like 10 hinges.
No, I need a. It's really it's a lot of work to pull the door off with one person.
One person.
It's so much easier when there's another set of hands.
Yeah.
At least somebody holding the door.
Yeah.
So I might try to enlist you on that one too.
Okay.
Sooner or later. But yeah,
don't you have a jack stand that can go up high enough to hold the door?
Yeah, but then lean it against the truck and now you have very small window of what you're removing.
Eh.
Yeah.
You can.
I'm not good in small places. I need more space. You need
more spaces? Okay. Fair. I'll give that to you.
All right. Glad I closed the door on that one. No, I haven't. It's a Bobcat's literally sitting in my yard with a cracked open
with the door.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do when it starts raining? We're supposed to start raining here
soon. Pull it in the shop or something. I don't know. I need to solve that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if I'm gonna go out this weekend with you guys.
I think you just need to get a new door, man. That way you'd have a functioning door handle, you'd have a functioning window, and you'd have a functioning hinge door.
Yeah.
Hinging door.
Yeah.
So
maybe. I would have a different color though. I don't think I could find that, you know, color.
Just repaint Bobcat. We'll have a painting party day.
We can do that. I mean, it's already repainted.
I know, right?
And I do have just a black fender, so yeah. You know. I don't know. Yeah, I was thinking about it. I actually saw some doors on Facebook Marketplace, and I was you know, so I've been looking at it a little bit. If the hinges solve the problem, I'll hold off for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, well, I could turn these into half doors, but they probably, I mean, the internal guts of the driver's side door doesn't really work anyway. So, well, maybe that's actually a good thing because I wouldn't have a window.
Yeah.
And I would move the handle to another spot, and
that just requires changing the length of your cable there. So
yeah, or just applying it in a different area that would work. So maybe that would be, maybe changing that door into a half door would be a good idea. So
it'd be a fun project for sure.
Yeah. And in the meantime, I've just been contacting some vendors and seeing if I can get better deals on Samantha parts.
Okay.
And working with some people to try and figure out if it's possible. Because
right now we're at essentially there's two different directions Samantha could go from where she is now. She's still sitting in the shop. She has the frame is all ground down, correct?
Yep.
So it's all prepped and ready to start being built now. And so the question is, do we have enough funds and enough parts to do something really cool, or enough relationships with some other companies that would want to get in to do something really cool? Or do we just need to use up all the Toyota axles we have, third members we have sitting around, build her like a typical Toyota, do something fun, like show how people how to really like focus on one thing, like how do you rebuild a Toyota axle?
Yeah.
And how do you build a Toyota axle to the best that it can be built?
Right.
And really focus on that as the main focus and goal of the build. And then the seller, and then get funds to, you know, put into something else.
Move on to the next one.
Charlotte or something.
Yeah.
So there's, I think it's the where Samantha's at right now, pretty much. And it's just kind of like reaching out and seeing if any companies want to get involved.
I think, for the main, I've kind of been holding off because I need to get some parts in regardless to move on. And I'm going to need to order parts pretty soon because some of the next phases of the build are going to be need to require these parts. And if my goal is to really keep these videos coming out at least every 2 weeks, which is what they're doing now. And eventually I would like to have them come out every week, but I need parts for almost the next stage.
Yeah.
And so I really am hoping in the next day or so I hear back from one of the vendors that has some of the parts that I need and see if we can move forward. Or else I need to go in another direction.
Yeah.
It won't change the build for the most part, but
okay.
It really one of the vendors, you know, will come down to like, oh, should I be doing a 4-link and a 3-link? Or are we going to do a budget build?
Yeah. Those are two very different builds, right?
Absolutely.
So.
And it was funny because I was talking to somebody online who just built up a 14-bolt front axle. No, it was a 60 front axle, sorry.
Okay.
And I said, I'm going to ask the one question that you should never ask. How much do you think you spent on that? And did you do all the labor?
Yeah.
And he said, I did do all the labor. And I think all the bells and whistles and everything, you know, like building this axle up cost him like $4,300.
Wow.
And when I did the math on my Toyota axles, it would be, I would probably spend about like $1,200 to $2,000 on it. The front axle.
Yeah. That's about right. I was thinking, you know, at max, if you did everything, ARP studs, new trusses, ball gussets, chromolys or even RCVs, six shooters. And then if you consider the steering into that as well, then yeah, I would say, you know, you're pushing upwards around 2000 per axle.
Right. Well, for the front.
Yeah.
There's a lot less that happens
in
the rear.
True.
And so, yeah, I'm, you know, it's like, I know a lot of people say, well, just go to the full widths,
yeah.
You know? But if I'm going to show, like if I want to build a bomb proof Toyota axle,
yeah,
it's half the price of, yeah. of a bomb of a full width.
Yeah.
And granted, I know people out there are going to respond and say, yeah, but a full width stock is stronger than a bomb proof Toyota axle.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that's true, but then I don't get a video out of that.
Yeah, I don't get content out of
it. I don't get a content and build the content of showing how to build a bomb-proof Toyota axle. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, and maybe I'm shooting myself in the foot here, but if I three-link the front with a Toyota axle and keep the rig on 37s, keep it fairly low, and probably 63s in the rear, and then dovetail and bob the bed and do a dual transfer cases with a 4.7, that truck is going to be very capable to do almost anything.
Yeah, I agree.
And it doesn't need to have full widths and 40s.
No.
You know, so I, you know, I think that would be a very interesting build if I could pull that off.
Yeah. No, I always get bummed. I don't want to say bummed. I always kind of get discouraged a little when people are like, oh, you want to do anything off-roading? You have to have Dana 60s and 40s in order to do it. And I'm like, no, you don't. There's people that get through the Rubicon on 31s open. Like they may not have as good of a time, although to them, maybe that is a good time, but like
they don't yawn.
They're not yawning. Like,
you know, that's a little, that's sorry to interrupt, but that's the whole argument of like, you overbuilt your rig for the Rubicon.
Yeah.
Like you don't like, to get through the Rubicon, you would need 35s.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that might even make it easy on some spot. If you're locked front and rear, 35 skids all around,
you're getting through just
fine. You get through no problem.
Yeah.
You know, you might get a dent and a ding or a scratch. But yeah, you're no problem. Full widths and 40s or 42s going down the Rubicon, you can choose any line and go any direction you want, and it's not a problem.
Yeah. So I don't know. I've just like, there's so many people that are like, oh, you want to run 40s? You have to have tons. I'm like, no, you don't. You just need to know how to drive.
Yeah.
You need to know how throttle control works and know how your rig feels when you're binding up your drivetrain, when you're shock loading your drivetrain. Like, there's a way more things that go into it. And so that was part of the reason why I wanted, really, really wanted to go 40s on the Toyota axles, just to prove people you don't need to be on tons. You don't have to follow this cookie cutter style stuff that's out there that everybody says you have to do.
Yeah.
Wheel what you got. And when you start breaking stuff, that's when you find where your weak points are. And
right.
That's when you start upgrading things.
Yeah. Or you can upgrade your system well enough that you know you can specifically put a weak point in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I would want my weak point to be my drive shaft.
Yeah. Right. Or your U-joints on your drive shaft.
Yeah. The U-joints on my drive shaft. So I, you know, it's like 23 spline through my T cases and a bomb ass third member and axle shafts so that my drive shaft breaks.
Yeah.
And I want it to break.
Yeah.
Before my axle shaft breaks.
Maybe that's why what Ian does. Maybe.
Maybe. From wheel every weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ian and Brittany, they go through so many drive shafts.
They do. Somebody sent me one the other day that had like wrenches welded to it to keep it all. I was like, is that Ian's?
Ian carries spare Harbor Freight wrenches just so he can repair his drive shafts.
Speaking of that, and this is off topic.
Yeah.
Not that we have a topic today, but I was listening to a midweek podcast. Total Off Road started doing these short midweek podcasts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so
good for them.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, definitely. And this one was on what do you carry with you out on the trail?
Okay.
And granted, they're.
Did they say chicken nuggets?
No, they should have.
Beer nugs.
Beer nugs. They're in a whole different demographic of a world or a whole different type of wheeling world section.
Totally.
So it's a little different than what I would carry out here. But one, they were talking about tools and what tools to bring kind of.
Okay.
And they didn't dive specifically into what tools, right? But they did say like, we bring sockets and wrenches and pliers and snap ring pliers and stuff. And then one of them said, and I can't remember who it was. They said, I went out and I bought a Harbor Freight, like the
toolkit, like a big,
what is the one that starts
the Pittsburghs?
Pittsburgh set.
Okay.
He said, because those are cheap. And if I drop a wrench in the mud, is gone. And I'm not worried. I don't care. I'm not looking for it.
Disposable tools.
Yeah, it's a disposable tool. You know, gotcha. And if I have to weld a socket onto something, I don't care. Because it's a cheap tool. It's not like I'm going to bring my Snap-on tools. Not that I have any Snap-on tools.
Bring your gear wrench tools.
Yeah, gear wrench tools.
I would be really sad if I had to weld like my gear wrench breaker bar onto something. I'd be like, oh no.
Right? Yeah. So I thought that was a good piece of information to think about is, you know, I also, they're in the same spot where, you know, they have, now they're getting to the point where they have their shop tools and they're going to have their rig tools. Yeah. And I'm already there, but I'm going through my shop, my rig tools and trying to figure out, do I really need to bring, you know, a 5.5 through 16 quarters and, you know,
and 10 all your 3/8 drives and half drives 19, and six and 12 points.
Right.
Do you need it? Yeah. Yeah.
Can I bring, you know, I think
need short and deep sockets.
Yeah. Do I need all of this?
Yeah.
You know, and which ones do I need? And so I think that's all another conversation on itself, but I thought that was a really good piece of information that they said. It was like, go buy some cheap tools to use out on the trail because if they break or if they, you know, you have to weld them or you lose them, it's not a very big deal.
That's almost like what I tell people about the Baofeng radios, the little UV5R handhelds. I'm like, they're phenomenal for off-roading because their lifespan is only 1 to 2 years max. If you have your Baofeng after 2 years, you need to be replacing that, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not transmitting on the frequencies you think it's transmitting on anymore. It may say it's transmitting on one frequency, but it's not really. So, but they're great because if you drop them on a rock, you drop them in a puddle, you lose one somewhere. I mean, they come with a little lithium ion battery pack that probably costs $20 by itself. So you're paying $25 for a radio. You're pretty much buying the battery pack and getting a free radio. Like they're just, it's a disposable radio is what it is. So they're awesome for off-roading. Don't have to worry about them. So, but if you like take your $300, $400 Kenwood that has GPS and APRS built into it and dual band and digital and analog and everything, you take that and drop it in a puddle, you're going to be crying. So, yeah, that's an interesting way to think about it. Just make your trail set just as cheap tools so that you can use them for welding and lose them and you give them to people and not have to worry about them coming back. And yeah, that's a good point. I like it.
So that's about all I've been doing.
Okay. Nice. I have been playing with Kermit.
Oh, yeah.
So I got Kermit back.
Okay.
As we most know. And
but you'll hear a lot about it next episode.
You'll hear a lot about the details of the 3-4 swap on the next episode on Monday. So I'm not going to get into those details. This is more of my feedback so far and kind of how I got it back and what still needs to be done to make it back to capable wheeling, right?
Sure. Okay.
And what have I done and how it's working out? What are my experiences with the rig so far? So I got the rig back and I pretty much got it back with the engine done, right? Yep. The engine drivetrain is all done. So we had the 3-4 swap and the 3-4 is in. We got a R150 transmission, so the V6 transmission in their manual. We redid my front T case with the 23 spline input on it. Kept it the 2.28 and made the rear, kept the rear as the 4.7. And it's all running fantastically. I give a lot of credit to Ori. He did a phenomenal job. I'm not throwing any codes on the OBD2. I threw one code, which turned out to be a TPS code. We cleared it, which is such a nice thing about OBD2. I'm going to love having OBD2. But cleared that code, and it hasn't come back. Right. And so we threw that TPS code on the way back from Ori's.
Yeah.
And
the snail trail shop.
So I've been driving it around for a week and a half, and it hasn't come back yet. So the big concern that I had with the whole swap going on is the heating, the overheating and the coolant system on it. Because in order to do the swap and not make new cross members for the transmission, the transmission mount and the cross members there, mm-hmm. and new drive lines and everything, and reposition, repackage all of that. We ended up taking the engine and setting it back about 3 inches from where a quote unquote stock location would be.
Yeah, where mainly the stock clutch fan would sit.
Correct.
The whole thing's back farther.
Yes.
So what's interesting about that though is mm-hmm. that you pushed a bigger engine.
Uh-huh.
Well, an inline four versus a V6. So yeah. The block is bigger, but it's not necessarily longer.
No, it's wider.
It's wider. It's
definitely wider.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, is the mounting position for the engine and the transmission in a different location then? Why is the engine back farther?
Because the transmission was it's a different length transmission.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the V6 R150 is
shorter,
a little bit more squat, a little mm-hmm. shorter than the W56.
Correct.
Or the R151.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that, therefore you had to move the engine back
mm-hmm.
and he had to make you engine mounts anyway.
Yep.
And so he just did it farther back.
Yeah.
And so now your concern is heat.
So now my concern is heat, exactly, because I don't have a fan shroud.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a good like 10 inch gap almost between my fan and my radiator. So I'm like, I'm kind of concerned about it overheating. And me with my proclivity for having overheating engines.
Yes.
I'm a little concerned about it. I'm a little OCD about overheating engines now. So that was my big concern. You know, I'm pushing more cylinders, so it's gonna have more heat in the engine block, and I need to make sure that I keep that engine cool. So that engine is really meant to run between about 190 and 205 degrees, 200, 205. Once it starts reaching 210, it's getting warm.
Okay.
Whereas like the 22 REs, they like about 180 to 190, right in there. And so I was like, okay, so I'm watching it and turned my temperature gauge in the dash works. It's spot on, perfectly on. And so I was like, okay, so that's one big thing I need to watch, is I need to pay attention to the temperature gauge. Just make sure that it doesn't start climbing above 210, 215. Once it does, I need to start paying close attention, pulling over, letting it cool down, mm-hmm. turn on the heater or something. So that was the first big issue, the big thing that I'm concerned about after the swap. And I think the way I'm going to fix it is
cardboard.
Yep. No, I'm thinking about making a sheet metal shroud myself and just make a simple cone that goes from the edges of the radiator back to the diameter of my fan.
Okay.
So we'll see how that works or not. And so I'll do that later on. It'll probably be in the springtime once we're out of the cooler temperature weather. So that's first big concern. Second big concern is that none of my accessories are hooked up. So when he took out the engine, did the engine, everything, he did everything beautifully, but he removed all my accessories.
Right.
So he removed, you know, my stereo. And then the shifter boots had to get redone as well, because they just didn't line up in the same position anymore.
Yeah. Cause it was a different spot.
It's a different spot for the transmission. So,
and in all fairness, he pulled out your whole like fuse block setup.
Essentially it's an S pod. Yeah. Switch Pros.
Because he had to put other things in that location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So he had to remove all that mm-hmm. stuff prior mm-hmm. one to have a nice clean working area and engine bay.
Yeah.
But he wasn't able to even put it back in the same spot or put it back because it was just in a,
there's just no room in the engine bay anymore.
Yeah. Different location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a few things that were in the engine bay that had to get removed. So I've got to find a new ways to package stuff and put things in. One is my winch control box. So that I had in my engine compartment. I'm still going to put it in the engine compartment. I think there's a couple different places I can put it there. So that'll still live in there. The second one was my switch panel, the fuse relay box mm-hmm. for my switch panel. That lived in the engine bay. I think we're going to be able to still put it up on the firewall right there. We're just gonna have to remake the bracket that supports it going down to, the fender.
Okay.
Or put, nut certs into the firewall so that we can just bolt it down and have it securely bolted into the firewall rather than using the sheet metal screws we were using.
Yeah, we should probably do that.
I think that's going to be the easiest way rather than fabbing up a new bracket to go down to the fender to support everything.
You might need a new bracket also.
Anyways, but we'll see how much
regardless, I think you need
to nut cert them.
Nut cert it.
Yeah. I have the tools for that now though, so that's there fine. I have to get threaded nut certs. So, so that is the other one. The third one, the big one, is my twin ARB, my compressor. So, you know, the...
Because you really need to air it up and air down at the trailheads?
I do, but I also need lockers.
Okay, yes.
Yes. So my lockers are run by the compressor. And so those I got to redo. Also, you know, my ham radios they aren't wired and hooked up working. My rock lights aren't wired up and working. My light bar isn't wired up and working, which isn't too big of a concern, the light bar, because my headlights are phenomenal. So I don't really ever use the light bar too much. It just kind of fills in the flood lighting directly in front of the vehicle. So I'm not too concerned about that, but like I really want my winch and my lockers and my radios up and working. And those are not set up and working yet. Mm-hmm. So I went on a trip, pretty easy trip. We went and did Hungaletti Ridge, which is the old Squaw Ridge Trail. It had to get renamed because it was considered offensive to the Squaw Indian people. So it's now Hungaletti Ridge, or it's also known as the Pardo Lake Trail. And it is a 21 mile long trail that doesn't have a whole lot of rock crawling. Like there's almost none of it. There's a couple little rocky sections, but for the most part, it's just a long dirt trail.
Got it. Did you do it in two-wheel drive?
I started in two-wheel drive, and like I did up to our lunch spot in two-wheel drive just fine. And then after that, there was a couple of really steep inclines and declines that I put it in four-wheel drive for just to have the extra control.
Sure.
So, but the RAV4 can make it to our lunch spot that we had lunch on, no problem. The trail's pretty much paved right now.
Got it.
But the second half of the trail, the northern half of the trail, it's a decent little trip. Like it would be a perfect trail to take Gear Wrench Corey through.
Okay.
And his third Gen 4 runner, or to take Charlotte through.
Could Charlotte make it?
Yeah, I think so.
Should I get rock sliders?
I don't think you would need them.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Charlotte can make it just fine the way she sits right now.
Yeah. I think Gear Wrench Corey is ready for the next level.
Yeah, I think he is too. He knows how to pick lines really well. And that's 90% of rock crawling and off-roading is picking lines correctly so that you're not getting hung up on things.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a good trail. The rig did phenomenally the whole day. I mean, we had some pretty fairly steep inclines at low pace. We were not going a super high pace at all.
Yeah.
We had 18 rigs.
Wow.
On the trip.
Big group.
It was a very big group. It was a lot of fun though, because there wasn't really anything too difficult. The most stockish vehicle was a stock JL Rubicon. So she had lockers front and rear. Wasn't a big issue. And she made it through. I think she only got hung up once, and it was not really, she got hung up. She's a manual. And so she just couldn't crawl and killed the vehicle a couple of times. So, it was a fun trip. It was a great day. It was a very long day.
Sure.
Very dusty day.
How far is the trailhead from your house?
My house, hours, it was an hour and 40, hour and 45 minutes.
Okay.
So not too bad. Maybe 2 hours. I should 45 to 2 hours.
Okay.
And so we,
that's a big window.
It's a
45 to 2 hours,
an hour, 45 to 2 hours. Sorry. but it was a fun trip. The 4Runner never once thought about getting over about 200 degrees.
Cool.
It stayed right in that 190 to 200 degrees the whole time, which was my big main concern.
What was the temperature outside?
It was, you know, mid 70s. So once it gets up in 90, 100 degrees, I don't know how that's going to work. I don't have AC in it either. So there was quite a few times, you know, it's just so freaking dusty on that trail where we rolled up the windows, but then it just gets hot in the 4Runner.
Did the secretary or the intern go?
Both were there.
Both went.
Mm-hmm. So it was nice to have them along as well. But without the AC working, it just sucked. Mm-hmm. So I like my AC. I hate being in hot, stuffy environments, right? And so that's why I have an SUV, a closed cab crawler, so that I can have AC and I don't have to deal with dust on the trail. And so not having the AC really sucked. So the first thing after the trip was to get the AC working. And so the 4Runner went to the shop Monday morning, and apparently because that the 3.4 is so wide, so much wider than the 22RE, and because we had to set the engine mount, we set the engine down about an inch and a half and back about 3 inches from where a quote-unquote stock location would be in the engine compartment. In order to clear the AC compressor pulley, Ori had to notch my frame.
Oh, geez.
Right there. And so that the pulley cleared the frame. But that also now means that my AC lines don't fit between the AC compressor and the frame.
No, bummer.
Which is a big, big issue for me. And so now that's taking a lot more time to get the AC done at the shop.
Okay.
And the AC shop is like, yeah, we looked at it and here's the big problem. You know, yeah, you do need new lines. We thought, I thought that all we were going to have to do was extend my lines because they're like 2 or 3 inches too short. So I'm like, here's the old lines. They all fit up to the manifolds. You have all the manifold pieces to fit up. So all we need to do is essentially make new lines. They're like, okay, cool. Yeah, that should be no problem. We should be able to have that out today for you. I'm like, okay, cool. Monday morning. Monday afternoon, no update, no call or anything. Tuesday morning, so I give him a call Tuesday morning. I'm like, hey, this is the guy with the 94 4Runner, the green 4Runner. How are we looking? They're all, yeah, so we have some issues. I'm like, okay, no problem. Highly modified vehicle. I'm expecting that. So what's our issues? He goes, we have a big issue. Your lines, we cannot fit them between your AC compressor and your frame. And I'm like, shit, that's a big issue. So they're like, we're working on it. We just have a lot of business coming in right now, and we just don't have time to do custom work. But it's there. We have people thinking about it, and we're going to, you know, once we get kind of a clearing, get people out of the shop, we're going to pull some heads together and find a way to do it. We will. Mm-hmm. There is a way to do it. We have multiple ideas. We just need to figure out which was going to be the best. I said, okay, cool. I said, do you have any idea of how much time this is going to take to do this? And they said, no. We don't have an idea.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
I mean, they haven't even got thought of a plan yet.
No, they haven't even come up with a plan. So it's now Wednesday. We're recording on a Wednesday. I'm supposed to be going to Spider Lake this weekend, Friday, Saturday. And we're going to be camping on the private property, the Rubicon Trail Foundation property, with the private property, John Arnes, everybody out at Spider Lake, Windy Camp. Mm-hmm. And I will not go on the trail and be... what is it called? The factor that holds everybody up. I will not be the weakest link on the trail, the liability for everybody because I don't have lockers.
Sure.
So I'm not going to go on the trail if I can't get my lockers working. Mm-hmm. And I can't get my lockers working until I get the rig back.
Right.
And once I get the rig back, what I still have to do to get my lockers working is set up my switch panel. Run all the wiring for my switch panel, set that up, fab a mount if I have to, do the nutserts and the firewall, get that all working and running, get all the wiring set up, hook it all up, and I have to run all the wiring for the ARB to do, and I have to run all the plumbing for the ARB. So dang. I have a lot of work I need to do in an increasingly shorter amount of time if I want to go out wheeling Friday morning.
Right.
And so it's looking more and more like I might not be going wheeling.
Why don't you just get your rig back from them and say, hey, I need to do work on it. While you guys figure out what to do, I'll bring it back on Monday.
Because they're going to charge me. They're going to charge me for the time that it's spent to do what they've done so far and figure out what they've spent so far, diagnostic fee. Mm-hmm. If I bring it, take it and then bring it back, they're just going to charge me another diagnostic fee.
Maybe. I mean, have you asked them that? Do you know that for sure?
That's
I mean,
what they told me last time when I had the white 4Runner in there.
Yeah.
The first gen. So, I don't know. That's coming down to being an option. Like I'm planning on when I leave the studio today, giving them a call and then talking to them about saying, hey, you know, I kind of need the rig for this weekend. I originally was told this was only going to be one day kind of thing.
I get it.
Why it's taking longer. Don't take that the wrong way, but, I need to make a decision as to whether or not I'm going out wheeling this weekend.
And the bummer part is, and I understand this to some extent for business, mm-hmm. but you're like, but I'm a paying customer too.
Yeah.
Right.
And for them to say, hey, we have other customers that we need to attend to. I'm like, uh-huh.
So what they're doing is they're letting people in front of the line.
Exactly.
You're letting customers cut in front of me where my rig has been there since Monday.
Yeah.
And you guys said it'd be a day work. We had no idea that this problem would come about, but my rig should have never left the shop until you figured out the solution and fixed it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a, I need to call them and have a conversation with them. So that's on the to-do list today.
Yeah. And another thing is, it's like, why do you need to do another diagnostic fee when you've done the diagnostic, you know the problem. Mm-hmm. So when I bring the rig back, you should have a solution so that you can move forward.
I would assume it's because it's a quote unquote highly modified vehicle and I could quote unquote make changes to it. In between taking it out and bringing it back.
I would not go back to this spot again.
Yeah. Do you know a good AC spot then that can do custom AC installations? Anybody does in the Sacramento area, let me know. I'd love to hear them. So anyways, that's on my to-do list is to call them and figure out whether I need to go down, get the rig back, or just let it sit there. Because the other thing is, when I originally made the appointment for the AC work, it was still getting up to 95 degrees during the day. And within a matter of like 5 days here, 4 to 5 days here,
right.
We're now down to like 70 in the day. So in the matter of 3 to 4 days, we had a 25, 30 degree temperature swing. So I'm like, do I really even need the AC anymore? Like, I don't think I do.
Probably once.
Yeah. So I'm like, whatever, but it's already in there now and they've already done some work on it. And are they going to charge me a quote unquote inconvenience fee to take the rig back and bring it back later? And I don't know. So I just got to call them and talk to them. But essentially I went on Sunday after the trip. I went and spent the whole day figuring out how to package the twin ARB compressor because it will not fit in the engine bay anymore.
Wow. Okay.
So I need to find a new spot for it. I refuse to put it inside the vehicle because I don't want the noise of a compressor inside my vehicle. Some people are okay with that. I get it. Cool. Kudos to you. I'm not okay with it. So I want it on the outside of the vehicle. So I needed to find a spot under where I can put it. So I found a little spot between two cross members in the rear, underneath the rear cargo area, up and above my rear axle. So very safe place. And I found a spot where it'll kind of fit up there pretty well. I just need to make a tray to hold it up there. But my trick is I want to be able to make the tray removable so that if there's any issues with the wiring or the plumbing, air connections, anything, or I'd say I need to pull the compressor down to redo the air filters on them or something, I want to be able to remove the tray. So it took me probably 3 hours of just kind of fiddling around and tinkering to come up with a way to package it up under the vehicle. And then I built a tray out of angle iron, a 1-inch square tubing, and sheet metal. Okay. I think 16-gauge, 20-gauge, 20 or 16-gauge sheet metal. Made this kind of thing and got it all situated and ready to put in, but I haven't welded in the legs onto the cross member that the tray hangs from. So I still have to weld that in there
also,
and then run all my wiring, all my plumbing, set up my switch box in order to get my lockers working for this weekend. So it's looking like it's going to be too much work. And I have a ton of Morflate orders to get out the door as well. Mm-hmm. And this whole time is too. So I don't know. We'll see. I might end up having to back out. And if I end up backing out of this weekend trip, then what I'm going to end up doing, I think, is I'm don't have any more wheeling trips after this planned until snow season. So I think what I'll end up doing is I'll finally go through and set up my dual battery setup and put a dual battery setup in that rear cargo space and put the twin ARB in the engine bay where the battery currently is.
Oh, interesting.
And then I'll completely redo the entire electrical system, pretty much.
Kind of.
In order to run the dual batteries back under the rear cargo compartment and keep the air compressor in the engine bay.
Wow.
So we'll see. It's kind of coming down to, you know, that's how I would prefer to do it. And, you know, if I have to rush things in order to go wheeling this weekend, then it's never going to get done the way I really want it done.
Right.
Whereas, like, if I just skip this last wheeling trip and just hold off on wheeling until snow starts, I can get everything set up the way I really want it set up. So
that's a tricky question.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the answer to a lot of people's, or the question that a lot of people ask.
Yes, right.
Should I get it done ASAP and go, or should I not? And, you know, because actually then, build it correctly the first time.
It's not really build it correctly. Just build it the way I want it.
Yeah.
And it's like there's always that dilemma. And I always harp on people like, go wheeling, wheel what you got, like have fun. The whole point of wheeling is to go out and enjoy wheeling. Mm-hmm. If you're always put yourself in the position of, oh, I need to get this next upgrade done before I go wheeling, or I need this to get done, I need this built to this strength before I go. Mm-hmm. You're never going to go wheeling. You're never going to enjoy it.
I agree, but I think your circumstance is different. Like, you're still building your rig.
I need lockers.
Yeah, you need things to be put in place.
Yeah.
Like, you're still, like, your rig has been overhauled.
Yeah.
You know, and now you're reassembling it.
Yeah.
And you know, you're not even back to the spot. You don't have, I mean, you got a working rig, but you don't have some, like, this is, I mean, okay, you're on 40s or 39.5s, but you don't have lockers. Yeah. Can you do the Rubicon? Yeah.
Probably.
Yes, you could.
You know, without a winch, too. I don't have a winch. So, I mean, I might go if I had a winch that I could, you know, winch myself through stuff.
Yeah.
But, and I know I'm going to be with a group of people, and the group of people I'm with would have no problem using their winches to help me out.
They would
get a sick enjoyment out of it.
They would, with lots of photos and then tagging us.
Exactly, right? but, like, I don't know. I just don't want to be that liability, right? Mm-hmm. So
you should be like, I'm coming, but I'm camping at the spillway.
I'll camp and get right after Gatekeeper.
Yeah.
On Snail Hill. Now, I know I get through Gatekeeper just fine, open, open. Mm-hmm. I know I can get through there. I know I can get to the other side of the bowl, open, open, just fine. I know that.
How about whale bones?
I can do whale bones, open, open, just fine.
Okay. How about the stairs on the bowl? Or the ledge?
The ledge, so I would go left. I'd go far left and go up that way.
Okay.
Open, open, just fine. I wouldn't take the ledge or the double ledges there.
Mm-hmm. The steps or the ledge.
The steps of the ledge. I'd go far left or there. Whale bones, I can do just fine, open, open. Let's see, where would I need it? Oh, I would need it at the big swooping left-hand turn. What is that? After winter camp.
The, like... Shortly after, after winter camp?
Mm-hmm. Is it before or after? I thought it was after winter camp.
I think it's before.
Is it before
winter? Right after winter camp is Little Sluice.
Little Sluice. Okay, so it's right before winter camp then.
Okay.
That big, you kind of have the a little bit of an uphill spot, but then it's just enough of a crossover there to get everybody crossed over, especially my wheelbase.
The rolling humps that are there that are super smooth. That are right after Soup Bowl?
Right after Soup Bowl, no.
I mean, going down, you wouldn't have a problem. You'd have gravity going.
No.
I don't know where you're talking about.
It's we've talked about this spot multiple times.
Oh, are you talking about Arnold's Rock?
No.
Oh.
No. Anyways, I don't know if I would make it through there without lockers, anyway. Without a locker. Because I know I have the perfect wheelbase to get crossed over, and in order to not get crossed over, I go slightly left of that. And God, who were we going up with that you were like right behind me, and I followed them up so closely that they couldn't continue, and you were like, well, if Tyler didn't follow you up and park right behind you in the middle of the obstacle.
I don't remember that.
Anyways, okay. But anyways, yeah, I have to go
Samurai James
left over. There's a big rock that's a pretty steep incline, and kind of a, if you don't have the ground clearance, you're going to get turtled right there. But it's either go over that or go through the spot where you get crossed over. And it's just enough of a crossed over and a ledge where you don't get traction on the front end, and then you just slip on the rear end as it's trying to climb. And it's like a big S turn as you're going uphill.
It's right after, are you talking about the one that's right after Ellis Creek?
It's right near there, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you pass Ellis Creek, you pass the bathroom, mm-hmm. smooth sailing, and then you have to go up.
Yeah.
And then there's the S. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's that spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that would be the only spot that I think I'd be concerned about.
And it was Samurai James.
It was. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, James. Not sorry. So anyways.
That's the one. And then we went a little farther mm-hmm. and we had to turn around. Remember?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then we came back down it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only real spot that I'm concerned about, that. And, I guess I'm not really concerned about getting through Little Sluice. It's just to get to Windy Camp, you either have to go through Little Sluice or the up trail. That's like halfway little sluice, halfway up the wall,
or the full bypass,
which the full bypass has some pretty interesting climbs out of and into the big puddles, the big pools of water.
I don't think you'd have a problem with it.
You don't think so? Mm. With wet tires and being open.
Is it wet up there?
They're those puddles the year round. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those are my two concerns. And so I'm like, I don't know. We'll see. But, yeah, so that's the to-do list with Kermit, right? So I made shifter boots out of a wetsuit, an old wetsuit I had lying around, which they work phenomenally.
Nice.
They work perfectly. I have no heat coming in through the shifter boots at all. And it looks perfectly fine because I still have the little stock cover over the shifter boots.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask if you left the Rip Curl or O'Neill or anything as like a little logo on it.
No, I didn't.
Dang.
Yeah. But that works great. It works fantastic. I had to rewire my amplifier, so I had tunes again.
Yeah, I love the fact that you've been pouting about all the things that you have to do, and you showed up at the shop when we swapped our tires, and you're like, my stereo's working. I'm like, so the very, very first thing that he wired up was his subwoofer.
Yes.
And not anything that, like, you probably could have your lockers done. You probably could have had the switch panel in, maybe.
Maybe, you know? I don't know, maybe.
But nope, you went straight for tunes.
I gotta have tunes, man. Gotta have tunes on the trail. So yeah, anytime I'm driving the 4Runner, I gotta have tunes. So anyways, yeah, those are the first two projects I did. Got those done. I knocked those out in an afternoon. So I got the shifter boots made and knocked out in an afternoon, and then I redid the wiring that same afternoon for the amplifier. So yeah, all I got to do is the figure out the AC, get the lockers working, get my switch panel set up, and then do the radios. And the radios are kind of a lower priority because I have a bunch of handhelds.
Right.
I've got 5 handhelds that work just fine on the trails.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's not a huge priority.
Yeah, you just throw your magnetic antenna out there.
Exactly.
Have one radio in the cab that's connected to that, and then you have another one that you can just go walk around with.
Exactly.
Yep.
So that hasn't been a big priority, which is funny because like I put an Instagram post out and I was like, here's step one that I've done, step two that I've done, here's step three that I've done. Anybody want to guess what step four is? And everybody said radios, ham radios. I was like, oh, that didn't even occur to me. That's like the last priority right now.
Nope, lockers.
Lockers. So yeah, that's where it is. My feedback of how the engine is working right now on the road. Beautiful. Amazing. Absolutely love it. I'm going to get myself in trouble. I'm driving way faster than I should in a vehicle with that much of a lift and no sway bars.
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to get myself in trouble. The secretary looked at me after I passed quite a few people in one go. In the 4Runner, she looked at me, she goes, just because you can pass people does not mean you have to pass people. And I was like, yes, it does. Shh, quiet over there.
Yeah.
But it gets up and goes. It gets up and goes almost faster than my RAV4 does.
Wow.
Which is very impressive for 40-inch tires on there that are 40-inch mud terrains.
39.5s.
40-inch mud terrains. And so the power on the road is awesome.
Okay.
Absolutely love it.
On the trail?
On the trail, not sold.
Really?
I'm not sold for having a 3-4 on the trail. Yeah.
I'm going to put a pause on that.
Okay.
Because I would like to hear your review also in the same rate. So far you've done a trail that is fairly easy.
I've done a fairly easy trail where power is fun to have on that trail because there's a lot of sections where you can just open it up and go as fast as you want.
Sure.
So that trail, I will tell you, it's the perfect side-by-side trail.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect for side-by-sides. If there's a trail that is like the epitome of where side-by-sides should go play at, it's that one.
Nice.
22 miles of tight, windy, open trail.
Yeah.
With a couple of rocks here and there.
Got it.
So what you would think, you know, having more power, it's a fun trail to have that on. And if I wasn't in a group of 18 rigs and I was at the back of the line where I had to, you know, just kind of be along in first gear the whole time, maybe I would have enjoyed the power a little bit more.
Right. I want to see how well it does through like the compare through like Gatekeeper and Whalebones and Walker Hill and some of those obstacles compared to the 22 RE where you're, you know, not that, you know, and what we do is we're just like, in this instance, we're just comparing the torques, right?
Yeah.
Cause it's not like we're going to go all that much faster through the obstacle because you have more horsepower. It's just, is it going to be easier? Is all those torques going to make it a little easier for you to get through it?
And that's really what I want to hit on.
Yeah.
Like, because
you haven't tried that yet.
Yeah. With rock crawling, I don't give a shit about power. I don't want power for rock crawling. Power is how you break everything when you're rock crawling.
Right. Yeah.
For rock crawling, you want torque. And this engine definitely has, it's torquey, but it's not really torquey in the low end. Like under 1500 RPMs, I think my 22 RE had more torque.
Oh, interesting.
Than the 3.4 does. Which is funny because, you know, the 22 RE is known as a nice little torquey little engine. But, you know, I thought for sure having a V6 compared to a 4-cylinder, it would be more torquey across the entire range of the RPM spectrum.
Yeah.
But so far in the minute amount of rock crawling that I've done with it, there was no in my, so far, I've seen no advantages to having the 3.4 over a 22 RE for rock crawling.
Yeah, well, let's get the list complete and let's go actually drive it up a wall and let's see how things, see if that changes your mind.
Yeah, and that's really what I want to see. With my dad's truck, I was able to run in first gear in just the 4.7 gear and climb a couple of rocks without killing the engine. In the 4Runner, I was not able to do that. Then I think that's the difference of the R151 to the R150, because the first gear is another half a gear ratio, 0.7 gear ratio, whatever it is, lower. I did do the calculation on my final gear ratio is 217:1, which before with the W56 and 22RE setup, I was 230, 228:1. So I did lose a little bit of gear ratio there, which I'm definitely contributes. But yeah, so far, granted my 22RE in the 4.7 gear, I had to feather the throttle as well. But I think that was more because I only had 3 cylinders.
No, even I have to throttle it a little bit.
A little. Mm-hmm. Because I want to keep the RPMs at 1500 or lower while I'm rock crawling. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I want the torque to perform at. So far it seems like the 3.4 torque doesn't really hit until like 1700 RPMs, but once it does start hitting, it really hits and it
sure
is beautiful. But like down in where I want to use it at, it doesn't seem like it's all quite there compared to how the 22RE behaved down in that same range in the RPMs.
Right. Well, maybe you need to change your wheeling.
Maybe I don't want to change my wheeling though.
Go buy another 22RE.
Yeah.
Or rebuild your old one.
I don't know. It is a lot of fun though on the road. I'll give it that. A lot of fun on the road, and anytime I'm going fast, absolutely love it so far. So I think I just need to use it more and really get a feel for it in rock crawling and in rock crawling trails. Like I want to take it on Barrett Lake, Rubicon, Fort Ice, and see how it's all really going to behave there in those scenarios.
Right.
Otherwise, so far, you know, do I regret doing the swap? No, absolutely not, because I'll be able to still do everything my 22RE did, but now I can also drive up the grades to the trails like a normal human being.
Sure. Yeah.
As long as I can get my AC fixed.
So. Yeah, I was, it was funny in regards to that, I was thinking about it, because Bobcat right now can't really go over 60 miles an hour. And when I hit a serious grade, like going up Highway 80 or the some of them on 50,
yeah,
it's actually faster for me to tow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Instead of driving it.
Yeah. I mean, going up those grades on 50, you know, some of the grades getting up 50 and some of the, especially the big grade going up 80.
Or Ice House.
You know, it's you know, second gear and that's what you're at, 40, 35, mm-hmm. 40 miles an hour. And you just feel like you're a huge hindrance to traffic.
I just throw myself over to the side.
Right. Throw on the emergency blinkers and say, sorry, everybody. But with the 3.4, you know, I have no problems going up the grades at 60 miles an hour.
Nice.
And you know, I do 80, 85 to pass people, no problem. Like, cool. If I want to downshift in fourth gear from fifth gear down to fourth gear to pass people, I can get from 60 to 85 miles an hour, no problems to
That's
pass
cool.
people.
Nice.
No problems. It had no hesitations. It's awesome. And so that's great. But so far I have on trail purposes, there's nothing so far that tells me that the 3.4 does better than the 22RE does. Hmm. So
yeah, anyways, I think we need to throw it into some more difficult obstacles. So
100%
test it out.
100%. So maybe, we need to get my lockers working.
Yes. Or maybe a Prairie City run.
Prairie City run. That'd be fun. I've had a lot of people tell me I need to come out to Hollister. Mm-hmm. And meet them out at Hollister. And I think that would be a lot of fun. Make a trip out to Hollister to meet some people, do a meetup. And that'd be fun because we could make like a full weekend out of that.
Easy.
Yeah.
If they're allowing camping there, even easier.
That's true. Yeah. So yeah, that's where the 3.4 swap is so far. What I still need to do. That's where it's at.
Awesome.
Yeah. Cool stuff, man.
Yeah. I mean, when we were driving home, like we were cruising, I was in Clifford and you were in, you know, Kermit, and we were going 75 miles an hour down the freeway.
It was beautiful.
Smooth and nice and easy. So it was really cool. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. I think that does it for me as well.
Cool.
So let's wrap this up. If you want to get a hold of me, you can, contact me at snailtrail4x4 on Instagram or jimmy@snailtrail4x4.com. Mm-hmm. You can send in that email there. If you want to get a hold of Tyler, you can get a hold of him on Instagram at 4x4toyotatyler, or you can email him at tyler@snailtrail4x4.com. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the updates on the projects going into Kermit are going there kind of on a live schedule. We've talked a little bit about it in the past, right? Like Instagram is what we're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
And the podcast is more like what we're doing on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And then the YouTube channel is kind of what we're doing on a bi-weekly, almost sometimes monthly basis. If you guys want to see what we're getting into on a daily basis, that's the Instagram's where to find that at.
Definitely. So. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Also, go make sure to check out the merch, Snail Trail 4x4 merch. Mm-hmm. Go follow Morflate on Instagram, or go check that out for a four-tire inflation-deflation kit. And go check out Snail Armor for all you Tacoma owners out there.
Yeah, so a lot of cool stuff happening. There's a lot of big moves happening with both of those as well, Morflate and Snail Armor. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into those on an episode here in the future once those are all actually launched and good to go. So,
excellent.
Cool, awesome. Any final words for everybody out there?
Stage 2 cam for a 3.4.
That gives me the jimmies. The jimmies? That's an interesting... Yeah, I guess that would be the jimmies would be there. With that, my friends, keep crawling.
I got one for you.
You do?
I do.
You even have it memorized?
I do.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, no phone hints today.
No, not at all. I'm trying to remember.
Is that the joke?
No.
Okay.
How do you want to find a haunted house?
How do I want to find a haunted house?
Mm-hmm.
Through your spooky neighbors?
Empty.
Oh. I want to find stuff in there.
I thought that was a good one.